We have any information on how the enforcement of the current law has been working now? I mean, who makes these arrests? Would it, let's say an example, my kid comes home and I smell smoke on him and I say, hey, you've been smoking, and he says, no, I haven't, and I say, I can smell it on you, and I finally get him to admit that he's been smoking, and kind of going back to my childhood here. And so I say, you can see my force speech coming on now. So I say, you know, my kid says, well, I got him down at Joe's supermarket or whatever.
Possession,
you know. And so I then bring that to the attention of the police, and the police would then prosecute, I suppose, or if my kid and I were willing to testify or something like that. Would that be a typical thing? Obviously, and I'm not trying to make light of anything, I'm just trying to understand how it would work, because obviously a cop wouldn't catch somebody in the act of selling to a minor, I wouldn't think, unless they happen to be off duty or something like that. But that sounds like a reasonable scenario. And I'm wondering if they have done any of this, or if it's a law that is totally ignored, if the law enforcement agencies actually do any of this, if we have any movement.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
The criminal law or enforcement of the law is not an area that I specialize in, so I'd say that. But during the testimony in the House, it was testified that there is not much, if any, enforcement, because they do not have, and I believe it is the Department of Public Safety that enforces that existing law that was only adopted a couple years ago. It's a pretty new law, and I believe it was Senator Fake's bill that set up the violation for selling tobacco. And I'm not aware that there's been any prosecutions or convictions under the law. That was one problem brought to our attention, is that there's no real way to enforce that. And I think that's something that the committee might want to consider putting more resources toward in an enforcement capacity. But essentially, I think it would be where a serious problem was identified. It would enable them to put together a case and do something. I mean, the law's there. It could be enforced. It's not routinely being enforced, is my impression.
Senator Frank.
Have you inquired as to, I don't know who would be the central clearinghouse, or if there is, you know, maybe the courts could tell you if there's been any convictions. I know we asked the court to tell us that on some other bill. Maybe it was the drug-free zone bill or something. But anyway, or whether or not that would be a local police that could tell. I guess it'd be the courts that would tell us how many adjudications there had been on this this thing. And I'm just trying to see how the enforcement and trying to
envision
how it would work.
Yes, sir. It's correct that the courts, under this bill, the courts would be notifying the Department of Commerce that there had been a conviction, and that would trigger the license suspension.
Yes, you may.
Another question. We're going to look at the bill and on the fiscal and on the enforcement part of it.
Okay.
Let's see if we can add.
I just wanted to express my appreciation for what you're trying to achieve, but I also have some hesitancy in supporting an additional licensure, and I would rather look at perhaps bigger fines or something like that. I hate to subject people and businesses that are being responsible, and I think many are, I think most are, in fact. You see signs and you walk into stores that we do not sell cigarettes to anyone under 19 and things to that effect. I've been behind people in grocery stores and 7-Elevens and had them ask for their ID. So I think I have to believe that it's something where the public awareness is increasing. I think many, if not all, certainly not all, but I think many and most retailers are probably fairly responsible on it. And I'd hate to see us burden responsible businesses with an additional regulatory or administrative system if we could come up with an alternative that would be as effective.
We are running out of time, but we will look into those things.
Can I just briefly comment?
Sure.
I think we have worked very hard to keep this bill from being burdensome, because it will just be an extra section they'll fill out at the time they already have to apply for a business license. The fee is pretty low, and we did have a more complicated scheme, and we worked with the affected agencies to get it as absolutely streamlined and so that it would not have that effect. And I think the point is that you're making that most people are following the law and are not doing this, is that this shouldn't be a problem for them. But I think it will give retailers an incentive to be careful about this area. And it's also consistent with the philosophy of we now require a special license to sell the drug of alcohol. This is consistent with that. This is a drug that has similar effects on the health of the person, and so we're putting it into a different category and saying, you know, to sell this particular drug, you're going to have a license to do so.
This would apply to a vending machine too, would it not? Sure. And if someone had a vending machine, they'd have to pay a $25 fee for that, keeping that in there.
Yes.
Okay. Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'd like to. I was kind of surprised that the Department of Corrections isn't here to testify on the aspect of 18 to 19. That was really the only reason we had put that in there at their request. And I had thought it was a fairly major, causing major problems within the correctional facilities. But, you know, if they're not here to even testify on the bill, maybe it doesn't really affect them as much as they had indicated earlier. So I'd like to take another look at that, and maybe we can go back to 19.
Okay. We'll take a look at it. Anything else to come before on this bill? Senator Pierce?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're going to finally have a question.
We're going to cover the
most popular
issue.
Right.
Can
you
ask
your
opinion about it?
We just got the graph, so we need to look at it. So he'll go over with the individual.
Guys, we're going
to
leave ourselves alone. The kids.
It's so funny today that everybody's laughing.
Jim said, "What kids from drinking, from driving, from smoking, from having sex?"
We want to have like a wish of the
great
world. We'd be a bunch of little weirdos.
That's right. Just imagine how we would have done it.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Do we want to have like a wish of the body on abstinence this morning, or maybe abstinence is the best policy?
You know, actually, there are other things that's harmful, like eating McDonald's and stuff like that.
I don't know. Abstinence might be harmful too if you look at the.
Maybe we could have a one Mac a week policy or something.
Yeah. You know?
We got that. How about sugar? That's a dangerous too. Sure.
Coffee.
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 Caffeine. That's caffeine.
Like
here's a purist here. Oh, that disposable diaper question.
That's right. You don't let them wear diapers anymore?
No one wants out all diapers and plastic lining.
That's right. That's a real problem here.
Discussion this morning will be on House Bill 190, and what we've done is done a committee substitute, making the effective dates the same. We have also, you should have a copy of a legal opinion that she's passing out. It's a paragraph.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have another suggestion on this that I've been looking at, and I'm wondering, just for thought of the committee here, what we've done here, of course, is rolled two different appropriations together, the general fund appropriation and the earnings reserve account appropriation, mm-hmm. which my interpretation of that action and what happened in this committee the other day is that this body's interested in appropriating from both accounts. Mm-hmm. Why don't we, and I'm quite sure we've got the votes in the Senate to do it, it seems to me that we might want to, if we're going to preserve that position, put that in the title. Do a resolution changing the title, which takes a two-thirds vote, and put an act making special appropriation to the Alaska Permanent Fund from the general fund and from the earnings reserve account in the title, so we're sure that those two items are both addressed in the House.
Good point, because what you're saying here is they could just delete the $400 million from the earnings reserve account.
That's right.
So then that's their political...
But I know that was a concern of yours earlier in our title of our Senate
and
bill.
We can change the title with a two-thirds vote, which I'm sure we've got on this side.
Well, we could do that, that can be done at any time, can it not?
Well, we need to have a resolution drafted for a title change.
Right, but I mean, that's not going to change how we feel about the bill, though, is it?
No, except I think we should send... No, I'm not saying that. I think we should send both of them together out of the committee, and I wish I had thought of this yesterday, but because I didn't see the draft until this morning, but it seems to me that we should send out a title change resolution as well as the bill together. So that they're both on the floor is the way you normally do it, and you send that over to the House, and then they can...
Well, the other thing is it could be passed out of the Finance Committee, and then it could go to the Rules Committee, and it could be the title could be changed in the Rules Committee. Senator Pierce?
Well, if we agree... I agree with Senator Duncan. I think that's a good idea and does take care of the fear that we have about what may happen in the House. We could... Those resolutions are easy to to draft. What do we, what's the, what happens? We don't send it with.
We do send it with it, but I think we could do this. I think we could change the title here in committee, report out the bill with the changed title, then have a resolution drafted that would go directly to Rules Committee to the floor.
Can we do that?
Interrupt.
We could very easily, since we've had this on the calendar, meet this afternoon at 3 for 5 minutes to say, here it is, but we can't do that because the resolution has to actually be introduced and read across straight to Rules, isn't it?
Is there another resolution we could change?
Yes, we got your FAS ones. You could strip.
The ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah.
for $400 million.
I mean, all we need is a Senate resolution.
Rules can introduce it and read it across and have it same day. So that could all take place Monday without any problem. If we sent this out with a change and tell Rules that they've got to do the resolution.
Can we change the title right here?
Sure.
Sure.
We can change the title for a draft here. It only take, you can't formally do it until you've got 2/3 vote on the floor.
Okay. I'm just stating here that we've got a situation where if we change the title, we need to get so many votes. You need 2/3 votes or something.
Yeah. Well, but you get 2/3 votes. So I just put that.
Okay. I mean, whatever. If you don't change
the title, you just send it without a title change. But
it's true.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's
if you don't get the 2/3, you can always take the
title change off.
Okay. Well, we do in the committee is we just adopt the.
Except you should send out a committee substitute with the right title.
Right. I know that, but we could go ahead and do the motion here, and then we could get it done. Carol, did you understand that? Can we do that? We could go ahead and make a motion here to incorporate it on the title and pass the bill out from that standpoint and have it right across. Okay.
Seems to me you want almost need two because if they don't accept the title change.
No. If they don't accept the title change, it comes back to us for non-concurrence.
No, I'm talking about the procedures on the Senate floor. If you don't have the 2/3 vote to change the title.
Then you can make an amendment to the bill on the floor. You change the title on the floor.
Right.
You don't need two committee substitutes. You can't have two committee substitutes. You just make a title amendment on the floor.
What we do is we would essentially have the same bill we passed out of the Senate Finance Committee 2 days ago, and it would have the two different effective dates in it. It would be the same bill, exactly.
It seems like what you would want to do is, if you could, is pass this out the way it is right now, and then have the rules do a CS there with the title change and the company resolution. That way, if you don't have the 2/3 votes on the floor to change the title, which I think will be there anyway, then you can fall back on the finance substitute. I mean, that's not a technical thing.
Except I think, I mean, saying on finance committee, I don't think I want to rely on the Rules Committee to make the title change and do the other stuff. I think we should do that.
Okay.
I think there's a very simple answer to that. I mean, Senator Jaroff is right. That's one way. The other answer is, if you don't have 2/3 votes, you just make a floor amendment that changes the title back to
the original
title. I mean, you don't have 2/3 vote to change the title, then you make a floor amendment and change it back to the original title and you solve the problem. I think the Finance Committee should report out the CS it once adopted and not rely on the Rules Committee to make the change.
Is everybody in agreement with that? Well,
I still like my idea better.
I hate about three people. It's a procedural question, I guess. I mean, it's a procedural question from the standpoint of, you know, how we do it technically. So what we want to do is we want to adopt it in the title of the bill then, or do we want to pass out the bill that we passed out 2 days ago in the same form? No, we want to adopt it and put it into the title of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I don't think you need to change the body of the bill. And my understanding is the effective date thing isn't that important anyway. When that $400 million goes in, it's $13 million of inflation proofing one way or the other, right? I mean, it's, or 16. It's
16.
Not that important. Seems to me the only thing you need to do is just change the title. Act to make a special appropriation to the Alaska Permanent Fund from the general fund and the earnings reserve account.
Does that still require the House just to concur in the bill on their side?
Oh, sure. They can just concur, but they have to pass it. They have to pass the title resolution. Take a 2/3 vote. I'm assuming they've got 2/3 votes to do that if they want to make a deposit. But
that's the only thing I'm thinking.
Yeah, or they can send it to a committee if they want to send it to a committee, whatever their plans are over there. I mean, it doesn't change anything for them other than it just is a title change in the bill. And I think my position on this is, I'm not one that's very, you know, I'm not out here going rah, rah, rah anyway on the whole thing, but my position, I believe that the Senate made a clear position, Senator Binkley did, and I thought you did and others, that you want a deposit from both funds.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that you really are going to assure that would be to put it into the title. And if they don't concur, you've always got the fallback position taking it out of the title or whatever, not concurring.
Well,
Do we have the language from the title of our first bill? Because I think it would be the exact same.
We do.
Exact same language.
Can we get that?
What was that?
Okay, I'm just thinking, if we, let's just think of it this way, Jim, though. I think what you're saying is, if the bill passes over there the way it is, all it does is take 21 votes to concur in it. Whereas what we're going to do is require them to take 2/3 on the House.
If it passes over the way it is, all it does is take 21 votes to delete Senator Binkley's deposit of $400 million, or Senator Kelly's deposit of $400 million.
That's true.
So it works both ways. So what we would like to do, let's make sure we have this correct, is we want to use this bill.
This is new.
Here. 306, yeah, this is it, John.
Oh, okay, we don't have the community substitute in there. Maybe this is it.
I have it.
Oh, yeah, here it is.
The effective date, you want to leave the effective dates the same then? Just make it immediate effective dates? Is that a problem? Senator Duncan?
That's fine with me. I mean, my understanding was the reason for the delayed effective date on the earnings reserve was because there was concern about having an inflation proof of $400 million.
I don't think
that's
not
a major concern, right?
I think that was a concern of the President, the Senator Kelly's concern, and I think we alleviated that.
Yeah, it's not a major concern.
So what I would do then is ask for a motion to move the bill out with a new title and the effective dates being the same on House Bill number 190, incorporating into the title an act making a special appropriation to the principal of the permanent from the unrestricted general fund and from the earnings reserve account in the permanent fund and providing for an effective date. Is that right? Senator Pierce?
I would so move.
Well, that's
really
early session.
Oh,
okay.
Senator Pierce?
I would so move.
Okay.
Everything he just said.
So ordered.
We move out Senate CS for House Bill 190 Finance with a changed title that adds, in conception, that adds that we're taking money from the general fund and from the earnings reserve account into the title.
Is there any objection to doing it in that manner?
Then, will you get a resolution drafted, or will you ask the rules?
We have to work on that.
Get our list drafted.
Yeah.
Finish your turn. What?
Hang on.
We're just going to drop this.
We're going to end up with 6 different bills, and we're just going to keep shoving bills.
We got any other bills?
The start of this morning today is Tuesday, March 6th, and present are Senator Fisher, Senator Pierce, and Senator Frank and myself. And the first resolution we're going to take up is Senate Concurrent Resolution number 53. Are we on the teleconference for this? Okay. This is relating to small business in the state. We have an extensive sign-up sheet, mostly on Senate Bill 315 and 238 and 288. But at this time, we will take up Senate Concurrent Resolution 53. Senator Pierce?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am Senator Drew Pierce. I represent Senate District G in Anchorage. That's Turnagain, Spinard, Sand Lake, and Chalk Campbell areas. I appreciate you bringing this resolution before the committee this morning, Mr. Chairman. SCR 53 does indeed relate to small businesses in the state, and I introduced it in response to the Governor's Conference on Small Business held in November of 89. You have a copy of the final report in your file if you didn't read yours as it came through your office earlier during the session. And the governor sponsored a conference bringing together over 100 small business people from throughout the state, and they worked through a series of resolutions and recommendations to the state for how to deal more equitably and better and how to promote small business throughout the state of Alaska. There are some excellent recommendations. There is now also a governor's response to the final report. I have a copy in my office. We'd be happy to share that with anyone on the committee. The resolution itself requests the governor to hold a small business conference every other year, to appoint a small business person to state boards and commissions that are pertinent to small business issues, to designate the Division of Business Development as the coordinating agency with other state agencies for small business issues, and to the extent possible to implement the group's recommendations. Some of the recommendations would take future statutory changes and I would like to see the governor deal with those recommendations. Mr. Chairman, we have with us today in the audience Jamie Parsons, the director of the Division of Business Development for the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. He would be happy to speak to the resolution. I might also add that I see that we've picked up a fiscal note of $100,000 in fiscal year 92, and then $105 in 94, and $110 in 96. While I believe that this is a warranted program, Mr. Chairman, my suggestion would be that since this is a resolution asking the governor, whomever the future governor is, to sponsor this conference, that we would put out from this committee a zero fiscal note if the incoming governor feels that it's important and takes our recommendation seriously. I would expect them to add that to their budget request this coming fall for next fiscal year.
Very good. Did you say Mr. Jamie? Mm-hmm. Mr. Jamie Parsons. Could you come forward, please? Great. And just for the record, your name for the record and who you represent.
Hi, I'm Jamie Parsons, Director of Business Development and Commerce and Economic Development. And I'm really here today to answer any questions if you had any. I think it's a critical thing is that we follow up on the issues that were identified, and I think it would be a laudable goal in the future at some point that this be totally funded by the private sector. I think the one, I attended the meetings that was prior to coming on board, and I think the one thing that became very evident is that the small business community is quite misinformed about state government and what the services that are now being provided, and I see that being one of the main duties of my division is to get the information out and have the small business community be better informed, and we can do that through communicating with the delegates. We have about 99 delegates to the conference, and then working with the chambers of commerce throughout the state.
Okay, any questions? Senator Fisher.
Yes, that was a cooperative venture between private sector dollars and state dollars. What did it actually cost the state that I found?
I just got the figures today from Mr. Frank Mears up north, and including kind is $200,000 in 17, and but as far as actual appropriation is $163,000 spent, of which the private sector raised approximately $63,000. The goal at first was to be a one-to-one match, but there were a few bumps along the way first time out, and I think we can solve some of those the next time around.
Yeah, I think Senator Pierce. My question would be, because I added it up too, and I thought my gosh, you're not going to come close to that $100,000 based on last year's, but with no fiscal note, then that started adding up to donors.
Well, I think the one thing we want to do, whatever money the state has, it has to be at least a 50-50 match from the private sector.
And if you do that, my suggestion is cash, not any kind of services, because someone said, well, only one of my staffers, and I have a staff, and therefore my any kind of services.
Please concur.
Senator Pierce.
Well, I might add, I think that the every other year conferences make sense. If you'll look, there's kind of a top 20 hit parade of problems and recommendations that they chose as being the biggies, and they came up with many, many more through the process. But these are not namby-pamby type recommendations. These are very meaty, and it would take both the any administration and also the legislature a period of time to attempt to deal effectively with all of these recommendations. So I think that rather than do it annually and have constant resolutions coming at us, that we do a conference, figure out what the problems are, try to resolve those, and then on a two-year basis at the least, come back, do a second conference, see what progress we've made, and go forward with that.
Senator Frank?
Yeah, I think that's a better approach. Idea of keeping the pressure on both the legislature and the administration to address these problems as opposed to just identifying them on a periodic basis. I think many groups, in fact, I'm impressed with the time and effort that this group put into it, because I know many times we tend not to address them, because like you say, some of them are tough. Some require us to make decisions that may not be comfortable. And so I think the key is to keep them on these problems on the front burner so that over time we'll address them as opposed to just identifying them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We also have the ombudsman here, too.
The ombudsman?
Duncan.
Hi. Thank you. I also came to support the passage of SCR 53. Our office has had quite a bit of dealings with the small business community and probably a day-to-day level. We have hundreds of complaints that deal with how the small business community is trying to cope with government on a daily basis. And well, we don't have hundreds on a daily basis. We have several on a daily basis. But we kind of range in the area of going from delay in paying bills to the state being in direct competition with the private sector. We have complicated licensing requirements that people get frustrated with. We have seemingly unfair application of inspections and of health and life safety issues, of code requirements and bidding issues that come up. And taking a look at the governor's conference, the 20 recommendations that they had, the problems that they were trying to address, if many of those were addressed, I think some of our complaints would certainly be gone away. And I think that it would be helpful to the health of that community if some of these could be addressed and dealt with. And also, I was frankly surprised and pleased that the conference also addressed my office. They felt that we were helpful, and we felt good about that. So, anyway, I just came to throw in a couple words of support for the passage of the resolution. If there's any question, I'd be happy to respond.
Okay, Senator Frank.
I get more of a comment than a question. I guess I hadn't really ever thought of the ombudsman as helping small business. I'm glad that you do that, and I appreciate that. That's another good reason for having your office.
Some of our more intriguing complaints come from that community.
Yeah, I'll bet. Thank you.
Thank you, Duncan. Any other questions? Anybody else testify on Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 53? Senator Pierce, was your suggestion to make a zero fiscal amount?
Yes, sir, I would.
Okay. First of all, the chair would entertain a motion to pass the bill out. Senator Pierce, is there an objection to the bill moving? So ordered, with a zero fiscal note. Next bill on the calendar, sponsor substitute for Senate Bill Number 288 by Senator Strzelczewski, an act relating to the Real Estate Commission and providing for an effective date. Senator Strzelczewski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for scheduling the piece of legislation. This legislation was requested by the Alaska Association of Realtors, and what it does is requires minimum education standards for both pre-licensing of real estate agents and for continuing education. As I've indicated in the memo to you, every other licensing jurisdiction in the United States and Canada requires either pre-licensing or continuing education, and a number of them do both. This came out of work done by the Alaska Association of Realtors. They've been looking at the question of mandatory pre-licensing education and continuing education for several years, and they've had a number of task forces. I put in two pieces of legislation, this one dealing with the disclosure by agencies, and that particular piece, the agency disclosure, has gone over to the House for action. But the point I'd like to make is I really am supporting the industry in its efforts to upgrade its professionalism and thereby really causing a lot less problems for the consumers out there, whether the consumers happen to be selling real estate or buying real estate. And I've been, over the years, very impressed with the self-policing and the efforts of the industry to maintain high standards. I think in the boom years, we would have been in a lot more problem if we had not had an industry that took care of itself. The Department of Commerce and Economic Development supports this legislation. It has been supported by the Real Estate Commission, by Department of, Commerce and Economic Development, by the Alaska Association of Realtors, and they will be talking to you on the bill. There, I've given out a brief summary of the sectional analysis. There's also a sectional analysis I'd call your attention to that's been prepared by the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. It has a very minor fiscal note. If you'll take a look at that, the net result is an impact of some $12,000 this year, and then it goes on down to a little over $6,000 next year. So the amount of impact on the state is minor, but the impact on the profession, I think, is very positive in terms of requiring education for both initial licensing and then the relicensing. With that, Mr. Chairman, you have a good number of people to testify. I would certainly respond to questions, but I know you have a number of people to hear from. Would be available for questions either now or later.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator Strzelczyk. Are there any questions from the committee members this morning?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Strzelczyk. I understand we do have some people on teleconference line, and they will be testifying. Okay, why don't we go ahead and start here in Juneau with the first person, and then maybe you can have the list over to me so I can see who else is online from Anchorage or wherever. At this time, we have on 288, I have to go down the list here, Barbara Craig. Did you want to come forward and testify, Barbara? Oh, Barbara, if you'll push your button forward, then everybody throughout the state can hear you.
That's exciting.
Not quite everybody. That's online.
Am I liable for anything I say? My name is Barbara Craig. I've been an owner and broker of Barbara J. Realty, then after I got married, Barbara Craig Realty, since 1986. My problem with this particular bill is that I don't think it's necessary that the state requires ongoing education to have your license renewed. Basically, I'm against, Section 2, Paragraph D. I don't believe that a person who is licensed under this chapter needs 20 continuing education hours approved by the commission. So far, I have not heard or seen any statistical information indicating that anyone currently licensed in that profession is doing anything wrong. I haven't seen any statistical information from Department of Commerce and Economic Development, the Real Estate Association. No one has given me any hard information saying 40% of the people in the industry are incompetent. So why do you need to require ongoing education if there's no statistics showing that you need ongoing education? Also, I do think that education is an important thing in our industry, and I think everybody that's successful in the industry is getting it on a regular basis. I think it's also interesting that the Real Estate Commission, since 1986, has been spending less each year on education, yet right now they're saying that we should spend more. In 86, they spent $136,000, 87, $126,000, 88, $89,000, and last year they reportedly spent $77,000. Each person that's licensed in the state pays into the surety fund. The surety fund has two purposes, to pay for surety claims and to pay for continuing education. I'm a consumer. I pay into the surety fund, this trust fund. They say to me I'm supposed to be getting continuing education. Okay, what I got last year from the Real Estate Commission was supposedly four of these brochures. This is six pages here. And if I paid in $125 last year, I figured out that each one of these little documents cost me $7.96. This includes postage and printing and labor and on and on and on. For the money I pay in to the surety fund, that's what it costs. They project that in 1990, they want to spend $100,000 on education. If they spend $100,000 on education, the Real Estate Commission, this quarterly document will cost me $10.35. And that's what I'm getting for paying into the surety fund. I was curious to find out how much it would cost if I created this document myself in the private sector. So I went down and I got a quote from Capital Coffee. They said $1,076, postage $403. I figure you'd pay somebody in the private sector $900 to put this on a computer, lay it up, have it, you know, proof ready. And I figure it'd probably cost $100 for people who are at the last minute trying to get their articles written that they promised. So you'd have a phone bill of about $100. I threw in $2,000 worth of state labor, and that came to, if I was in the private sector, if I was doing this, I could probably create this document for $4,500, and it would reach every person in the state, and that's $18,000 a year. Okay, so let's say you have this budget of $100,000 next year. And me, a private sector individual, could put this same document out for about $18,000, and this includes labor. So the next thing that the Real Estate Commission may want to use money on in with the surety fund is making sure that everybody has a current copy of the state statutes, administrative code, and regulations. That's not too much to ask. You know, the commission send out every year the documents that you're supposed to operate by. And I figured it would cost about $6,700 to put those documents out. The Real Estate Commission has, executive officer of Grace Oakley's office, has said they've come up with what they call a broker's kit. They came up with this one document called Explaining How to Run Your Trust Accounts, and that was a very nice document, and I'm glad they sent it out. And now they've supposedly created another document, calling it the broker's kit. Well, the labor's already done, so all they have to do is send it out to each broker. So that's another $7,000. And then in their fiscal note, they say it'll cost about $6,500 for travel, contract, and supplies. And if you want to maybe register some of all this material that's sent out to the brokers to make sure that you're assured that they have these documents and you can, they have to sign saying they are in possession of these documents, I figure it would cost about $2,500 to send out registered mail. So if you take all those expenses away from the $100,000 budgeted, you still have $59,300 to run the rest of the education program that they've budgeted for. Now, if I paid somebody $59,000 and said, I want you to create a program so that you make that test real tough. We want to make sure we have continuing education for pre-licensing. We want competent people in our industry from day one. Okay, so that person with $59,000 in 1 year should be able to come up with some sort of system so that you have required pre-licensing education. So I figure there's enough money in the budget right now, they've already requested $100,000, for them to adequately provide for what they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to accomplish keeping people who are not competent out of the industry and weeding those people who are not competent out. Okay, if you require pre-licensing standards.
Okay, we're going to have to watch your time. We do have a lot of people behind that are ready to testify with you, but if you could come to
I'm
summation.
I'm just about done.
Okay, I go ahead.
So basically, there's enough money in the budget right now to accomplish what they need to do. My main concerns in this bill is that they want to add a state employee half-time. They call it a GGU Range 12, and they want to spend $17,000 to create this half-time position. Well, I've already showed you they don't need it because they already have, $100,000 budgeted. They want to spend $7,700 for office equipment. If you don't hire a state employee, if a state employee isn't needed to be, the job isn't needed to be created, then you don't need to spend all the money on the equipment. Basically, I don't think we need the continuing education. If somebody passes the test, they're competent. If they're not moral and honest by the time they're 10 years old, you can't force them to be more moral and honest by the time they're, but with more education.
Well, we don't need it.
And you can't have one person being everything to everybody. I sell remote property. Now, who in the state system is going to be able to say, yeah, Barbara, I think it's going to protect the public by you going to this seminar that discusses mineral rights, extralateral rights, what's the difference between state claims and federal claims? So I just don't think the bill is, the continuing education is necessary, and I don't think it's necessary to spend this extra money creating a position that really isn't proven to be necessary.
Okay, thank you very much, Barbara. Senator Binkley has a question.
I didn't have a question, more of a comment, and just wanted to thank Barbara for her testimony. It's refreshing, really, to hear somebody come forward and give a little debate on some of these issues. Many times all we hear are the advocates that come forward, and it's good that somebody, particularly in the private sector, takes a look at some of the costs associated with this and gives a careful eye to that sort of thing. And I want to thank you for your testimony this morning.
Thank you very much, Barbara. At this time online, we do have Grace Oakley. From Anchorage, so we'll be glad to hear from you, and you have a full crowd here to...
Okay, can you hear me?
You bet. Just your name for the record and who you represent, Grace, even though I know you.
Grace Oakley. I'm the Deputy Secretary for the Real Estate Commission, employee of the Division of Occupational Licensing. I was really prepared mainly to respond to questions. However, I would like to comment that this bill is one that we see as being a our counterparts in other states. As Iris mentioned in her introductory remarks, Alaska is the only state that doesn't have a pre-licensing or continuing education, either one, at this point in time. And it then has led to some confusion and so on as far as licensing people from other states, or more particularly for Alaskans going to other states. If our requirements were more compatible, I'm sure that people would find it somewhat easier to transfer their licenses across state lines. But even more than that, our primary purpose as a commission is to protect consumers, and the more competent we can have the people that are out there generating and brokering real estate transactions, the better we will be doing our job of helping the consumers and protecting their interests. The real estate industry is one that is a very changing industry. As anyone who has bought or sold property over the course of the last 10 or 12 years, you know that things are not the same now as they were 2 years ago, and they're not the same as they were 4 years ago, or six, or eight, or 10. And that is the primary purpose of the requirement for continuing education. We would envision that the courses that would be approved for continuing education would focus on the most recent trends and events that are happening in the real estate industry. And that those are the courses that would be required for people to know what the current case law is, new precedents that have been set, to know what happens within the field of financing, within the field of equal fair housing. There's all of the different regulatory bodies, both state and federal, that affect and impact the way a transaction is put together. Those are the things that will be concentrated on in that continuing education. I think that at this point, as far as testimony is concerned, I would prefer to respond to questions that the committee might have.
Okay, thank you very much, Grace. Do we have questions? Senator Fisher from Soldotna.
Yes, I have two. Is one, you had indicated that as though we need to get up to the level of your counterparts outside. Are you kind of saying that Alaska is somewhat, I'll use the term, inferior to...
I think not inferior, but I think that we are lagging behind them in what we require of licensees as a minimum standard. I think that there are a great many of the licensees who have taken it upon themselves to educate themselves and to become very proficient and up to date on what they are doing. But it's not something that is across the board for all people who are licensed as real estate agents. And the statute would make that a minimum requirement that would be up and current. I think we're just a little behind.
And I guess my concern is if you do that, then probably they should be transferable from other states and have some kind of technical agreement. I'm not so sure the industry would want that, but that's just, you know, one comment. The other is pre-licensing. Right now, isn't there, even though there's not a mandatory requirement for education, that for somebody to pass the initial test, they have to have some kind of education anyhow?
There is no requirement that they have any particular amount of classroom hours. They have to pass the exam. It's about a four-hour exam that is the only thing that establishes that minimum standard. There are schools that people can go to if they choose, but they also are not required to. They can simply buy a book on real estate principles and buy the or get avail themselves of the statutes that are covered on the state law portion of the exam, and they can study themselves and then walk in and take the test.
Okay, and I guess, Mr. Chairman, my comment is if the people can do that, they on their own, then would they not be getting educated? As I understand it, a person just can't walk in and take the test. And their chance of passing would be slim, unless they go out and do some independent study, which is a form of education.
That's true. It is a form of education. I think one of the benefits of the education itself is the discussion and the hearing how transactions are handled, because there are... We all know there are people who can study to take a test, and they do well. They are almost professional test takers, as opposed to practical knowledge of how to apply that when they get out in the business world.
Mr. Chairman, last comment is though,
even if you do force a 20-hour course or whatever, these people are probably still going to have to take a test to see whether they did well in the 20 hours of instruction, so the professional testing is going to do well again anyhow.
Are there any other questions for Grace?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Binkley.
Thank you. Grace, do you have the figures? Barbara Craig testified to the amount that the commission is spending on continuing education, how it's declined over the years. Do those numbers correspond with numbers that are put out by the commission? And if so, why have those numbers declined fairly dramatically in the last 5 years?
88 and 89, which are the 2 years she mentioned that it has taken a significant drop for expenses paid for education. That was some very cautious spending on the part of the commission because we, first of all, had to determine exactly what the balance was in the surety fund. It had not been audited for some time, and that was accomplished during the fiscal year of 88. So until we knew exactly what available funds we had, we spent cautiously, and then we also had a tremendous backlog of claims that had been filed and had not been dealt with, and we anticipated some very heavy payouts. And the other figure that was provided to legislative research, and I imagine that's where she picked up the figures, where it shows that the amount that was paid out for claim settlement in those same years that the education was declining, the claim settlement went from $52,357 in fiscal year 86 to $88,000 in 600 in FY87 to 90,800 in FY88 to 118,031 in FY89. So we were knowing that the only education funds available that we had were surety fund monies, and that the claims had to be paid. We were trying to anticipate and not go in the hole. And I'd also add that the commission last summer, essentially for the license renewal that we just completed, raised the fee that each licensee pays into the surety fund to $125,000, so that the fund is in good shape now. We have still some outstanding claims to be paid. We have about $97,000 worth of claims that are being appealed, and in a worst-case scenario, would have to be paid. They may or may not, but we don't know at this point in time. And the fund, the money that is in the fund right now, is money that has to last until the next licensing renewal time, which would be January of 92.
Okay, Grace, Senator Binkley, and then Senator Fisher, and we have two other people here in Juneau that want to testify, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick clarification. Did you say $125,000 or $125 per?
$125 per licensee.
Okay. And the other question was, how many people are employed in your office, sir, Grace, in the Real Estate Commission, state employees?
I am Dan here, and there is Terry McGilvery, who is a public information officer for the commission, and then one investigator that is real estate, but that's not really an employee of the Real Estate Commission. It's all within the licensing investigating force.
Okay, so basically there are three employees there?
Correct.
Okay, and could you make available for myself, at least, and maybe the other committees would be interested too, that audit that you spoke of in fiscal year 88?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Okay. There's a copy that I see someone's handing up in the back. Maybe we could have a copy of that made, please. Okay, maybe we could get a copy of that from...
I'm sorry. Could you clarify for me what is being handed out?
Well...
It says from Grace Oakley to Gordon Harrison, Legislative Research. It's the data that I'm referring to that she wrote yesterday.
Okay, thank you. We'll look into it.
Whoever was speaking, that was cut out, and I could not understand what it was.
Grace, that was just someone holding up a piece of paper. It was Barbara that was back there. We'll do some checking on it.
Okay. Now, I don't believe that there's a copy of the audit available down there, but I can make one available.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next person testify, Senator Fisher.
Ms. Grace, when you get on the bill, the section I have a little bit of concern about is Section E, where the commission certifies not only the course outline, but they also have to approve the instruction. And that indicates to me that you would eliminate some of the trends in education today, which is self-instruction. In other words, a person could actually develop a course outline based on a video or based on you working at your own pace. But what I see here, it has to be a person with body directly in front of whoever's taking the course. Am I correct on that?
Well, the intent, I believe, that was indicated here was that there would be some control over the people who were presenting the courses. That doesn't mean that they could not make provisions, particularly for the smaller populated communities, to have correspondence or videotapes or something like that, but that the person that was preparing the course and the live presenter of the course, if there were would have to be somebody that had met at least
a
minimum criteria
approved
by the commission.
Okay, but you have no criteria for your property. So we don't know what...
No, that was
anticipated
and anticipated that would be handled through regulations.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Frank? Thank you. Grace, have you guys considered just having tougher entrance exams or whatever, licensing exam, and or periodic retesting or something to ensure that people are competent, as opposed to just the continuing education or pre-licensing education?
I think I hear several questions there. One is, have we considered a tougher entrance exam as far as people getting in the first place? And two, have we considered having people retest as a means of ensuring
but
that's the continuing competency. Is that correct?
Right.
Did I understand your question correctly?
Yes, you did.
In the most recent task forces, the idea of just a tougher test was really not considered. It has been over the years that I've been involved in real estate, it has been considered as a possibility. And certainly we want the entry-level exam that is administered by the commission or through a testing service that we contract with to be one that does establish a minimum standard. But the thing that, as I indicated, I think, in my opening comments, the thing that we see as the additional benefit from the educational courses is the understanding that people have not just of what it takes to pass the exam, but of how all of these things really fit together and work in transactions, and the impact on the continuing education level, the impact that court decisions and new laws and new regulations at whatever level have on the way business is conducted and the way it impacts not only the licensees but also the consumers that they are serving. So I guess the short answer is no, we really didn't consider that at this time as a viable means of what we're trying to achieve.
Okay, we do have some more people to testify on the bill. Senator Fisher, do you want it in subcommittee?
Yes, Grace, right now, isn't it, at least I always thought it was a broker's obligation for continuing education, at least of salespeople. Is that the way it is now, or am I wrong?
The way the statute reads now, a broker has an obligation to supervise the people in his employ. And there's nothing in the statute that says he has an obligation to educate them. He has to supervise and make sure, and he might use education as a means of conveying to them exactly what it is that they are supposed to do. But if you're looking strictly at the language of the statute, it doesn't say that he has an obligation to educate them.
Then if the salesman wasn't satisfied with the in-house education, why would he not then go look for another broker?
That's an option that he has.
Okay, the people that I have listed to testify here in Juneau are Mr. Don, just a minute, Rick Cook. Is Rick Cook here? Okay.
Rick Cook on Steve's staff.
Barbara Craig has already testified. Conrad Ranke.
Was Rick Hunter in front of me, I believe?
Are you Mr. Hunter?
Hunter, yeah, Rick Hunter.
Oh, okay. Are you from, yes, Mr. Hunter from Wasilla?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
did
please.
Did I print that back?
Sorry?
Did I print that
back? No, it's Hunter. Did I not say Hunter?
No, he's a Mr. Cook.
Oh, I said Mr. Cook, okay. Everybody's all over the page on this thing, so go ahead.
Okay, for the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Rick Hunter. I'm the legislative chairman for the Alaska Association of Realtors and also the president of the Valley Board of Realtors. This SB 288 has been ongoing for several years in an effort to try to catch up to basically the rest of the United States as far as their education is concerned. There's only four states that do not have this type of education. And in answer to Mr. Fisher's question about the pre-licensing, yes, you can go out there and take a course, but it's readily known that any of these courses that are taken by and given out by a real estate school, they basically tell you right at the beginning, we're not here to tell you at all anything about real estate. We're going to tell you how to pass the test. That's exactly the way it was put to me 11 years ago when I first took my course. Secondly, people can walk in right now from any stage of life, whatever, and with $65 and go down and sit down and take the test on the last Saturday of the month. If they pass it, they got their license. We had a recent case of that where an individual did exactly that. His wife studied for weeks, and he said in his exact words, well, I'll go take it just for grins. And he did take it, and he did pass it, and his wife did not. And 3 weeks later, after he got his license, 3 weeks after he enrolled with a brokerage, he was in trouble. Digressing right to that, I'm glad Grace alluded to the surety fund as far as the payments out are concerned, because that's where we see some of our problems. We know that the surety fund has got to pay this money out, and of course you don't want to pay it out unless you would go out and pull out the money for the education unless you're quite certain that you're going to have the money to pay these bills. And we really honestly feel that some continuing education in some of these areas would keep people from getting into trouble. Secondly, as Mrs. Craig mentioned about there's no stats as far as incompetency is concerned. Notice there are no stats that are available. We are a self-policing organization. We have a thing called professional standards. When someone is brought in front of those professional standards, that all that information is kept in the ultimate privacy. And a lot of these things, again, with continuing education and pre-licensing, to get these people qualified and so that they can go in there and talk sensibly and logically to their customers and their clients. I came out of a professional standards hearing last week, and the poor person that was in, the young lady, honestly felt she had done the best by her customer, when in fact she had done the worst, but it was simply a lack of knowledge. And the fact that, don't do these things, go to your broker, check these things out. So we feel that the pre-licensing, I'm definitely for the pre-licensing. Again, one more step to take, and I'll make this quite brief. The brokerage. You can take your license, hang it on the wall for 2 years, go up and work the slope, come back down, take it down, go back, take the brokerage test, and boom, you got a broker's license. Now, how much trouble are we in? And without this licensing, and without this pre-licensing, the ongoing education, and the brokers, the additional 15 hours for a person to get a broker's test, I think we could probably bring that surety fund back into size.
Okay, Senator Fisher.
I guess the pre-licensing, I don't know the course, and granted somebody said you go out and buy a book, but I'll tell you, I've seen one maybe you've heard of called Commonwealth something, I don't even know what it is. It was that thick. And for somebody to go through that, you're talking 30, 40 hours.
Yes, I agree, but the test itself is only that thick.
Right, but the thing is, you don't know which within that quantity you're going to pull, assuming that everything's covered. And I guess maybe what you should do, I don't know what value it would be to give somebody 20 hours and then they can't pass the test, which the test is based on items that you don't need to train for, you know, you're just reading. Maybe you should say, after you pass the test, and you are now a salesman, now we need to teach you other things. And if your broker doesn't want to do it, we will make you do it. But I took a test in Pennsylvania years ago and passed it to be a realtor. And I just looked at the effective date. I still have a chance to get in before you. You've got to stay here in Alaska since we're talking 1991-92. But I would hope we don't make it so hard that the people just can't become a salesman.
No, that's not the intent at all. It's like, I would hate to think I'd have to get an airplane with somebody just went over and took the test, the written test, and passed it, and then jumped in an airplane and started flying without any practical work on it. And of course, again, along those lines, it's the continuing education that an individual has to get in order to go on up the ladder. You just don't jump from private to commercial and CFI and all that. You've got to go back to school. You've got to take education. You've got to take additional tests. You've got to take additional training. And this is where I think that the real estate profession in Alaska is lacking. For example, in California, you have to have an associate degree in order to be even considered for a real estate license.
Okay, let me give you guys, I'm not understanding something. When you talk about continuing education to get 20 or 30 hours, is it a pass-fail situation where if the person doesn't pass some kind of a test, they're out?
No, sir. No, that's not at all what it is. In order to, every 2 years we renew our licenses, which the next one will be, of course, in 92, on January of 92. We would like to have individuals take at least 20 hours of some sort of education through that period of time.
Okay, it would be similar to what teachers do then.
Right, yes, exactly.
Okay, are there any other questions for Mr. Hunter?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Chairman, this is Grace. Could I make one point of clarification that I don't believe has come up today?
Yes, Grace.
That is that the hours that we are talking about are actual contact classroom hours, not university credit hours.
Okay, they are contact hours?
Correct.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have anybody else here to testify on this bill? Is this Conrad? And if there is anybody else that wishes to testify on the bill, you do too, sir. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Conrad Reinke. I'm an associate broker here in Juneau, and I'm also currently the 1990 president of the Southeast Board of Realtors, which is one of six boards throughout the state that makes up the Association of Realtors here. I would very briefly just point out that the one, I think it's unusual for the private sector to come to the legislature and ask for legislation specifically. And secondly, that in this particular case, we're asking to improve the image of the and the credibility of the realtors, and also for obviously better protection for the consumer. I would point out that here in the room today, behind me, if with your permission, I could ask them to raise their hands to save time with the people that do support the bill, if that was...
Okay, go ahead. Who's in favor of the bill?
Okay. All of it, part of it?
The way it's written now. Go ahead. Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, Conrad.
Thank you very much. I thought that would save us an awful lot of time for everybody coming up here.
I have one question, and that is that, you know, I know that there's always a lot of questions in commerce about putting more occupational licensing people on board, and I see here we're adding one seasonal occupational licensing examiner, one. I don't know if you can speak to that, Conrad, or...
I'm not prepared to.
Okay. Those. I'll ask Randall Burns in the back when we get to, when we finish the testimony.
Super. That's all I have, other than we have very strong support within the industry for this.
Very good. Senator Frank?
Hey, Mr. Chairman. My impression, although I haven't really received much communication, nor have I sought too much at all, was that there was some, are we on teleconference? There was some dispute within the industry amongst the rank and file as to whether this was necessary and or a good idea. And it's not uncommon, I think it's probably somewhat common, where the industry leaders are addressing issues and you know, want to move ahead on a progressive basis. While sometimes some of the rank and file are prone to be you know, not as supportive of change or you know, additional requirements. And I'm not just talking about this industry or any industry. I mean, it's the case with us as legislators sitting here trying to get you know, things done, things accomplished. But it's, am I incorrect in my assumption that there is some resistance on the part of licensees out there in the field to this whole approach?
I would be lying to you if I said there was 100%. I would suggest that your analysis is correct, and this has evolved over several years, and the support has gone from sort of indifference to a very strong support within the industry. So I think your analysis is correct from the standpoint of what it was maybe 5 years ago. But in light of what things have been happening through the years, the industry has come around to the other direction now and strongly supports this legislation, and that is why we've asked and requested that the legislation be introduced.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Conrad. Senator Fisher?
Maybe you're not the right one to ask this, but if you look at Section PMC, why is it that a salesman, that law applies in January 1, a broker, an associate broker, he had to put it July 1, the same anniversary?
I think Grace can answer that, but I believe the rationale there was for the commission to have enough time to produce all the necessary courses and people and so on and get it in place so that they, on a staggered time schedule. I believe that was the reason for that.
Okay, thank you. Senator Frank?
Thank you. How often does the commission meet, do you know?
I believe they meet four times a year, but Grace, you better answer that.
Four times a year, I believe, is correct.
I'm wondering about the situation here where you have
a course outline and the approval of the instructor. It seems like you may run into a situation where courses are being offered, you know, and you're trying to line up your instructor, and something happens and your instructor has to decline for, you know, some personal reason. I assume that most of the instructors would be not full-time, and instructors, and they might perhaps be, you know, one of your members, and they might have to back out. And I'm just wondering if you, if greater flexibility might be warranted so that you could change instructors without having to wait for a quarterly meeting. Or maybe you could do it by teleconference, I don't know.
I would assume that they would have sufficient instructors and course outlines so that that would not be a problem. And obviously they have to deal with the, as Grace pointed out, some of the smaller communities where it may not be practical to or fiscally sound to try and fly somebody in for one person, so that some other form would could be used to.
Okay, thank you. Senator Frank, did you have another question? We do have some more people to testify on it. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm starting to feel a rural exemption coming on. But.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Well, without further ado, sir, did you sign up? Sir? Yes. What's your last name? Come forward, please. I'm sorry. I have another piece of paper behind here. I'm sorry. Bruce Winton. Mr. Winton, go ahead.
Thank you, Senator. Just so that the committee understands where I'm coming from, my background, I've been licensed in this state for real estate since 1954. I've served as general board president twice, as Alaska State Association president. I served on the Real Estate Commission, where I was chairman of License Law Committee, and I've served as a national committee chairman for realtors. I'm very strong on realtors. I'm extremely strong on education. My problem is I am not strong on state-mandated education. I have seen too many cases where a mandated education course becomes a get-together for people, and they don't really learn anything. I think that there's a confusion between honesty and competency. No matter how much education you give a person, you cannot legislate honesty. And I think that's where you'll find the majority of the cases come before the surety claims of the Real Estate Commission is not so much as incompetency as it is dishonesty. The issue of reciprocity with other states, I'm sorry, I've never been a great believer of that. I believe that if I don't necessarily want everybody that has passed some course to be able to come up here from another state and get a license, or for me to go somewhere else. I'm a long-term Alaska resident, and I believe that way. I think you will find that if you go through in thinking this out, that there is a very strong impetus for a broker to educate his people, because he stands in a very great chance of losing his license or losing a costly lawsuit if one of his agents makes an incompetent mistake. So the supervision of the broker concept, which is in our statutes, I believe works very well. The concept of a mandated education course of 20 hours every other year, I'm sorry, I can't agree with that. I see it costing too much money. I see it becoming a make-work project rather than an additional benefit to the consumer by protection, which is, I think, what we're looking at when we're looking at our licensing statutes. That's all I have to
say. Okay, we have some questions. Senator Frank.
Thank you. Have you been active in the, I see your pin on, you're obviously you're a member of the Board of Realtors?
I am a member of the Board of Realtors. I am a member of the State Association, the National Association.
I see. Okay. Do you see alternatives to mandated programs? And the one that comes to my mind is a competency test, or a more strengthened competency test, or entrance exam, whatever.
I believe that you'll find that our test is one of the best in the nation. And it continues to be, it continues to ride right up at the top of the marks by the educational testing services. I don't know what the answer to your question is, sir, because my problem keeps coming back to, I see it as an attempt to legislate honesty rather than competence, and you can't do that. I have no argument with the pre-licensing education. I think the post-licensing education should be the work of the broker, and I think that the market chastises anybody who does not keep up in this field, especially in the real estate industry.
Okay, so if I could just follow up on that for a second.
Senator Frank, continue.
So you're comfortable with the existing level of requirements, and you don't think the state should add or mandate any further examination or education?
That is correct, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So your position is that you don't really support the bill in its present form. You think that this will add another layer of government on top of what we've got over there, and that can be done privately instead of through the Real Estate Commission.
Exactly, sir. And I'm speaking specifically to the ongoing education. I think that the market does chastise people who don't keep up in their field, and certainly a broker who doesn't keep his salesman up is definitely in trouble.
Senator Frank?
Thank you. Just one further follow-up. Do you travel to state conventions and that sort of thing?
I don't now. I have for several years, yes, sir.
Do you communicate with counterparts throughout the state?
Yes, sir.
What kind of a sense do you have of the feelings in the industry? Do you feel that it's it's widely supported or not? What do you think about that?
In discussions that I've had with people, I do not believe that the continuing education is widely supported by licensees.
What about brokers?
Brokers, either salesmen or brokers.
From the same perspective that you have, or from a different perspective? For different reasons or for the same reasons?
Well, I think some from the same, quite a few for different reasons.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Senator Pierce, did you have any questions? Any other questions for Mr. Winton? Senator Zaroff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess we're on the conference here.
Let me just, it's now getting to be about 10:30, and what I'm going to do here, we still have a little bit further to go on this. I don't know if there's anybody else to testify. I do not see, we will not be getting to the last bill on the calendar, Senate Bill 335 today, or 315. I can't see us getting down that far. We're just too many questions on this bill and too many people to testify. So, Senator, so I apologize about that. We'll have to put it over. Senator Zaroff.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The broker's license, is that a renewable one? You have to renew it every year?
Yes, sir. Every 2 years.
Every 3 years?
2 years.
2 years. And then I guess I'm looking at Section 3. It says that a person is eligible for a real estate broker's license if the person, and then it lists a whole list of things here. Now, do you have to comply with all of those items listed here, or do you have to comply with parts of them, or what?
All.
Okay, and then you mentioned that there was a concern there about those people that were operating illegally or fraudulent or just basically bad guys. Isn't that covered in here? I guess I'm looking here. It says you have, if a person is not under indictment for or 7 years have lapsed since a person has completed a sentence of forgery, theft, extortion, conspiracy to defraud creditors, or any other felony involving moral turpitude, and
the old
person is an owner of a real estate, and so on. But isn't there that section down in there that deals with all of the problems there that you've discussed?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, well, then why do people continue to get licenses then if they are fraudulent or if they are...
I'm not saying that they do, sir.
Okay, maybe then I missed the
I think I'm missing the point of your question.
Maybe I missed yours then, too. So,
Senator Zaroff, did you want to rephrase your question?
Well, I don't know how I could rephrase it. I guess I was a little concerned there that I was under the impression there that there were brokers out there that were fraudulent there that had, I don't know whether there was theft involved.
Violations.
Or different violations, and yet they were still operating. But yet, if I renew their application for license, do they just send in a form there and say, I want to renew my license, and the department just gives them their license without any review of anything?
You send your renewal form in and your fee in, and if there have been no cases against you, I think the renewal is relatively automatic. But the point is, how am I trying to say this? If a broker is in business actively and in a period of 2 years has absolutely no complaints brought against him by anybody, I think it's relatively safe to assume that he's obeying the law.
Mr. Chairman, even if he's had complaints, but no charges, I mean, he still receives his license.
Well, do they not have the ability to revoke it and take it away,
sir,
if it violates the code of conduct of the Real Estate Commission?
Not the code of conduct.
Or whatever it's called.
I wouldn't call it a code of conduct.
Okay.
It's the requirements of the law. Yes, sir. Absolutely. They can refuse to relicense it.
I'm not sure what the point here is. The fact that he has taken some education doesn't make him any more an honest person. It's not going to stop him from, if he's doing something dishonest, continue doing
it. What you're saying is that in many cases there are situations where someone never has a complaint against them and they're doing a good job because the marketplace would tell them if they'd be getting a lot of complaints back, I assume.
Absolutely, or they'd go out of business for lack of business. I mean, the marketplace is in some respects, a great regulator of the honesty of a profession such as real estate agents.
Senator Zaro, what are you trying to get to moral turpitude, or?
Well, that and figure out the rural exemption here, but
there's no room for rural exemption on this bill. It all has to be equal. Senator Fisher.
Earlier, you had said that all these things have to be divided into brokers' renewal. And what does this mean to you? The person furnishes satisfactory proof of successful completion of the education requirement. What does that mean to you? Satisfactory proof of successful completion.
A sheet of paper initialed by somebody who says you took the course and that person had been approved by the Real Estate Commission. But, let me tell you one of the problems I have with this. Satisfactory proof of successful completion. Amongst other things that I do, I'm an assistant professor at the University of Alaska where I have taught real estate courses here for some 14 years. I can't begin to tell you how much research that entails each and every semester to make sure that I'm on top of the subject so that a student can't say to me, well, you're talking about something that happened 5 years ago. I'm also currently, hopefully, the author of a soon-to-be-published textbook in real estate appraisals by a national publisher. I can't begin to tell you how many hours a week I read things such as the Real Estate Law Journal, Real Estate Digest, keeping up on things. And I think there's a great many, when I was active in sales, all of the people in my office did because I required it. I don't know how to answer that, sir. I really don't. I have seen so many courses, when they become required courses, the impetus is not on learning, the impetus is on getting a piece of paper saying I sat through 20 hours and got this piece of paper. And I have a very bad feeling about required education, legislated education.
Senator Fisher, through the chair, go ahead.
The teacher would have to do something to say you successfully completed this program, as I see.
Yes, sir.
Okay, which can mean somebody could really be there sitting, and the instructor says, what a ding-dong, you know, and he's not doing anything, and he says, I'm not going to say you successfully completed this. If he says that, then you don't get your broker's license. That's why you have 95. So then this is a method of revoking a broker's license to a court.
Indirectly, yes, sir.
Okay, are there any other questions for Mr. Winton? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Is there any other questions from is there any other testimony from Juno? Randall Burns and the lady in the back, I'm sorry.
My name's Chris Foster. I'm not signed up, Senator. I'm sorry, I couldn't be late.
Okay, thank you. We'll take Randall. Well, go ahead, Chris. If you could, why don't we... Randall's going to answer some technical questions, then we'll get right over to you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Randall Burns, Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing. I think it might help the committee, and I hate to spend this much time on the bill, but Grace Oakley is in a very good position to assist this committee in giving you some background vis-a-vis why the profession is seeking this kind of licensure. And the claims that we have against the Charity Fund and the complaints that we have in our offices against real estate brokers are a pretty good indication of the problems that we see within a profession that supposedly is licensed and knows what they're doing. So maybe you should hear from Grace about some of the problems that we have that give rise to consumers, but with real estate agents. I can't think of many more agencies that we have, more important things that a person does in their life is buy a house. And we have significant problems with people who are filing complaints and making claims against Surety Fund because of the errors of the persons who represented them. We require continuing education of hearing aid dealers and all kinds of people. Certainly, hearing aid doesn't cost anything like a house costs. So I think it would be appropriate perhaps for you to hear from Grace on that so you can get some perspective of why the commission and the profession itself has approached you with this bill.
Okay, Randall, just a technical question on the fiscal note. You have one seasonal occupational licensing examiner, one, for half days. Do you plan on using that person half-time somewhere else? Or why do we need another person in occupational licensing to do this job, and so on and so
sure.
forth?
Mr. Chairman, if I might. we're requesting a half-time position to assist the commission in the actions of dealing with these, this proving of this coursework, and in going through the problem of making sure that the courses are adequate, dealing with the inspection and the approval of the instructors. I think that you have a significant problem within this profession of individuals who are more than willing to teach a course, and once you create basically and allow an industry to begin presenting courses and requiring those courses, you're going to have springing up all kinds of people who are going to be out there representing themselves as experts in that particular field. And we feel like, and that's the reason the commission has requested, that these courses and these instructors be first approved. Otherwise, you're going to have people out there teaching these courses who really don't have the expertise and the knowledge to do that. Grace doesn't feel that she and Terry, the two employees right now who work full-time in this area, have the time and energy to do that. So that's the reason for the half-time individual.
Okay, so I guess, Randall, what we're trying to do is determine what violations are out there and if the continuing education course is really going to help curtail those kind of violations, and I guess that's what we got to get down to. So,
right.
And you're saying you can't answer that, but Grace can.
I think Grace can give you certainly a lot more specific information about the surety fund claims and the division that we have between what you might call dishonest acts versus the actions of individuals who simply claim and in some ways probably weren't aware of the requirements through ignorance and not having met the, not being updated on what the statutes are requiring and what the regulations are doing and how they should proceed in these transactions. These days, these real estate transactions are not simple. They're incredibly complex. And I think that the commission is concerned that if you're going to suddenly put someone in the position of representing a consumer in a transaction that might have three different funding sources and all kinds of things, that individual probably needs more than have passed the exam before they can be out there adequately doing that, and that's the reason for the pre-licensing courses. And then the continuing education, I think, as well. So why don't you ask Grace to give you some background on
it? Grace, could you briefly give us some background on Randall Burns' testimony?
Yes, I think I can shed some light here. Let me just put about four examples of things that have occurred in the 2 years that I've been in this position that show that people just simply do not know what it is they are supposed to be doing. There's no intent to harm anybody at all implied in that, but it really becomes an act of negligence because they did not know, even having answered questions sufficiently correctly to pass the exam, and these questions are many of them are on there, they still, when they got out into practice, did not do the deed. And one of those, on the part of brokers, is the improper handling of trust funds, or allowing someone other than the broker himself to be a signatory on the account, and then never supervising the work of that person and saying, I had no, I didn't steal any money from anybody, but he also was not taking care of supervising and checking on the person who was handling the funds. The mishandling of those